Hello, everybody. This is Doug with the Affair Recovery Group, and I'm here with Jeff Murrah, and Linda will be on the line here in a second. And Jeff, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Doug.
Good.
Good.
I can't complain. Doing well, thank you. What we're going to talk about tonight is we're going to kind of pick up on what we talked about last week as far as how to get a cheating spouse out of the affair fog. And as you recall, Lynn and I talked a little bit about our own situation last week, and we wanted to give our group members also the perspective from a marriage and family therapist. And obviously, Jeff, that's where you come in. So what I wanted to do is just kind of start off again and remind people, just kind of give them the definition of what the affair fog actually is, and then we'll turn it on over and go from there, okay?
Okay.
All right. As we remember, or as we recall, I should say, from last week, the term the fog can be described as being similar to being brainwashed. And the thrill of the affair envelops the wayward partner in good feelings, and the excitement can be overwhelming. They feel a new high, a feeling of being in love. They begin to rationalize with themselves in order to cover up their feelings of guilt. They may convince themselves that their marriage was already bad, that their partner really doesn't love them, and that the affair partner must truly be their soulmate because he or she is the only one that understands them. Then begins the repeated internal dialogue of the rationalizations over and over again in their minds. It is as if they become addicted to the affair, needing the constant high it brings, many times with total disregard for the betrayed. Over time, they really begin to believe all the lies they've told themselves. Their beliefs are reflected in their actions, loving to the affair partner and angry and hostile towards the betrayed. Wash, rinse, and repeat, and soon they are deeply entrenched in the fog. And we really thought that that was a pretty good definition that kind of summed everything up, Jeff. I'm going to turn things over to Linda here, but wanted to get your perspective on what you think about that definition, and then we will take it from there.
Okay, that sounds good.
The definition is a good place to start. It's a working definition. As a clinician, some of the terms like brainwashed, my mind jumps ahead to some other things when I hear terms like that. But I know a lot of times in everyday language, we use one set of words, and then when therapists and counselors get together, we have a different meaning that we attach to the words. But that gets kind of nitpicky. My own experience with the affair fog, I've made the observation that it's very similar to a hypnotic state. And by hypnotic state, it's the person is in a state of euphoria and want to live in fantasy rather than real life. They prefer a lot of passivity to where they would rather react rather than initiate things. And many of their decisions are driven more by their emotions than by logic. They're also highly suggestible, and I suspect this is where the brainwashed idea comes in, because when they are in that fog, the lover many times can suggest things to them that they wouldn't typically do, because people usually have a range of behavior, but when they are in this state, it's almost like that high or that euphoria or the hypnotic state about falling in love. It's just that while they're in this state, they'll do anything that the person says. And they throw a lot of norms and typical behaviors out the window. There's also a strange distortion of time. You know, so if you get into arguments with them, they have one, it's almost like they have a different clock than you do. And many times when you look at them, they have this glazed over affect. You know, it's almost like the elevator doesn't go quite to the top. You know that they're there, but nobody's home. Now, does this line up with some of the stuff that you've experienced in dealing with this?
Oh, definitely. As I said, my behavior was predictable, the way I dealt with things during this crisis, where when, you know, things that Doug did was totally unpredictable and different from the way that he had dealt with our conflicts and crises prior to this. So, yeah, I felt like I just could not get to him. And as I said before, I really thought that he was on drugs. I started questioning because, you know, the money was, he didn't have the money by the end of the week because he was, you know, going out to lunch and so forth. And just the way he was in his own little world. When you say they have a distortion of time, what do you mean by that? By not like realizing how long things were lasting, or by memories from the past?
Okay. With the distortion of when my experience has been, when people are in the affair, they might be with their lover for several hours, but to them it just seems like a few minutes. And start bending and distorting time, it's not limited to just the affair.
Mm-hmm.
It starts happening in other areas as well, and I suspect that's part of where financial irresponsibility comes in too. But go ahead and liken it to being in a hypnotic state, because they are definitely in la-la land at that point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's, as I said, it's almost like you, a whole new person has showed up at your door, and you don't know how to deal with it, deal with the situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's weird because they're the same spouse that they've always been physically.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like, you know,
right.
And that creates, well, that's part of what creates this whole sense of unreality to dealing with the affairs. Well, when you were dealing with Doug, how extreme was this affair fog?
At the time, it was. I thought it was pretty extreme because he was, his thinking was totally uncharacteristic for him. He didn't really, you know, care about his family, you know, leaving his family. He thought that they would be okay. He didn't care that I was, you know, very upset and losing a great deal of weight, not sleeping. I really couldn't get through to him in a way that I normally would, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
He, as I, you know, I use the word brainwashed, but I guess that isn't a, you know, the right word. But he just had different ideas that I had a hard time understanding.
Brainwashed. It's not like, well, in some ways it's right, in some ways it's not totally accurate. The husband or the real wife isn't there. There's somebody in their place.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of the challenges there.
And I see a lot of the suggestive thinking, you know, things that he would say. I know he couldn't have come up on his own. Those aren't just ideas that he would have thought of. You know what I mean? I think there were more female ideas than male. I hate to say that, but I think he was very easily suggested on how he should proceed with, you know, the relationship and his marriage and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I said was
hear that quite often.
Yeah.
Where the cheater puts him up to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
If I put it on a continuum, on a mild level, they're making suggestions, concerned recommendations about divorce, legal things, it could even be or belongings. At the further extreme end, I have seen the suggestions used where people, the lover sexually exploits the cheater. And by sexually exploits, I mean takes them way beyond the bounds of what they previously considered normal. You know, doing things that they would never even dream of doing. But while they're in that state, okay, I'll do it. I'm gay.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's
scary. Just,
Yeah, but this is maybe off it, but do you see the difference between people in a fog in an affair and people who are in a fog who are just, you know, beginning to date? You know, they're both in the infatuation stage, but do you see differences between the two? I think that the affair seems so much more severe.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some similarities to the states because, and the literature does talk about how when people are in love, it's very similar to being in a hypnotic state. Mm-hmm. With affairs, my own two bits, I find it more extreme in the sense that it's not something that everyone enjoys. You know, like you may have first fallen in love with Doug. You enjoyed it. He enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And it was a win-win. With the affair, it's almost like us against them type of mentality starts getting set up. And there's where people are taken advantage of. And sadly, many times, not just the spouse, but also the kids are the ones hurt mm-hmm. by all the craziness that's going on.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's hard for the cheaters to see that. That, you know, they're like, well, we're in love, but when, you know, because Doug would say, I felt like I did when we first met, and I had to constantly point out to him, no, we weren't hurting anyone. You weren't in a relationship. You know, you didn't have children. It's different, you know. And I understand what he was saying, but I wanted him to see that it wasn't the same. And I don't want you comparing the two because they're totally different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, after I read this definition that y'all gave me, I went ahead and did a little bit of thinking in terms of fear fog. Because much like with a fog, there's a purpose to it. And with the affair fog, many times it's about, now I'm going to go down a list here, and some of them will ring true, some of them may not. Okay. But the fog is what you can see, so you end up avoiding reality, avoiding choices, avoiding pain, avoiding intimacy, avoiding honesty, avoiding future direction. And with different couples, some of those different variables will be more important than the others. Now, this may sound strange. I have seen some couples where it's almost like there's both parties get into the fog.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And what I mean by that, the fog's real easy to see. And, you know, many times they're avoiding some of those things that I listed. Then the resolute spouse can find themselves in a fog as well, mm-hmm. And also for some of the same reasons, you know, because many times, although we say we want intimacy, it can be scary, mm-hmm. And likewise reality can. Now, what's different about their fog, they tend to want to replay the affair over and over and over and over again, act like it's still going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they get the negative fog while the other person had all the dreamy, enjoyable part of the fog.
Right, and I can see myself do. I did that.
And, you know, the payoff is it has some distortion because sometimes the couple's not quite ready to do things or they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now when you said that you did some of those things, how did you find yourself in that kind of negative affair fog?
Because I think by continually wanting to bring it up and talk about it, I kept myself there because I was afraid not to. Does that make sense? I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know what I wanted to do about it. You know, it was something that I knew that I wouldn't be able to handle or, you know, maybe not live, continue being married to someone who betrayed me. So I think I kept myself in that fog and that fantasy because I was afraid to make a decision. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah.
And I think, I was afraid not to.
Mm-hmm.
I think while we were in the fog, it seems like we were talking more and more, we were closer. And I was afraid that if I moved away from that, that we still wouldn't have that closeness. That was holding us together.
Oh, man.
The affair was.
Well, talking about feeling damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, if you continue talking about it, there's problems. If you quit talking about it, there's problems. That's a definite no-win.
You know, and I think after I realized that, then I was able to move on.
Yeah, because it's hard when you're stuck in it to see your way out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That also goes for the cheater as well, because they many times don't even realize they're in a fog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the hardest thing is trying to help them realize that they're not thinking clearly and that they are living a fantasy world. They think that everything they are thinking is real and everything they're feeling is real. And I think that's probably the most obstacle that most betrayed spouses have.
Yeah, because, I mean, when they're getting together with their lover, they're constructing this kind of joint fantasy together of jetting off to Rio or the Caribbean or wherever. That's a lot more fun than SpaghettiOs and having to mow the lawn.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, to them, it's all real. Like, it could happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, Doug and I were talking the other day, you know, his affair, like, everything was about fun, you know? The other person, she wanted just to now experience all the fun. And Doug said, you know, you can't base a relationship only on fun. And I said, well, that would be nice. I said, well, what were you going to do? I mean, with your jobs. And he's like, well, we never really talked about that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so far beyond our realm of thinking because everything's so logical to us, you know, who's on the
right.
Other side.
Well, let's see if I can put it this way. You have extreme gratification. And in with the case of the affair, you have a lack of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And typically you've got to have a responsibility with the gratification. When you separate those two, that becomes the whole basis for people to start getting into crazy thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because they keep going around trying to gratify this, gratify that, and they never have to deal with the consequences or any kind of responsibility there. And that becomes the drive behind a lot of pathological things. Another thing I noticed in your definition that I wanted to go ahead before we run out of time today, because it's going to take me a few moments here, is where you talk about it, the guilt. It says they rationalize with themselves in order to cover up their feelings of guilt. Now, to my thinking of guilt, guilt and blame go hand in hand, and typically people try to balance one out with the other. And when you feel guilty about something, they've got to find something to blame it on. And this guilt-blame balance I see at work in people whether or not there's an affair fog.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with me so far?
Yes.
Okay. And the more extreme they do things, the more they're going to have to blame. Now, the way that we as humans are wired, most of us, I can't say all of us, because I think there might be 1 or 2% that don't fit this picture, but most of us, deep down inside, we know what's right and what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're doing things that we know is wrong,
mm-hmm.
we experience guilt. And so the usual way of dealing with that is blame. Now, when they are in the affair fog, they're in La La Land and they can put off having to deal with the guilt right away. But eventually they are going to have to come and deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I find this guilt blames at work, whether the affair fog's on or not.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that eventually, like with their, if they're found out or whatever, that's when they will start doing the blaming. That while their affair is a secret, they may feel some guilt, but does it normally come after it's revealed the blame?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a strange seesaw. That's the way I describe it to my clients, because they're feeling miserable up until the point that the affair comes out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's out in the open, their level of pain suddenly drops. It's like they have a sense of relief now that it's out in the open. And at that point, the pain shifts to the resolute spouse.
Mm-hmm.
They have a pain. And as a couple, goes through the healing process, it's almost like you can tell when seesaw shifts and mm-hmm. the person carrying the pain goes from one party to the next. I know as a counselor, it's always painful seeing that happen, and I know what's going on. When I explain it to them, then I can see the light bulbs go off, but it's still a painful process to go through.
So after they find out, you said like during the affair, the cheaters are experiencing a lot of pain, and then after?
Yes. The pain of having to keep the secret
okay.
and not talk about it and mm-hmm. live in, I hate to say paranoia, but I know mm-hmm. they're yeah. always wondering what happens if, and having to outthink their spouses all the time to mm-hmm. try to stay one step ahead of them with their cell phones and with their computers
right.
or
yeah, I imagine it would be really hard. Yeah, it'd be exhausting to live two lives.
And if nothing else, it's mentally exhausting. There's, mm-hmm. because it takes a lot of brain power to keep up with that stuff.
Right, and who would you tell what? And yeah, in both sides. And it's not only you're lying to your spouse. I think you're also lying to your lover. You know, in some respects.
Oh yeah. Well, it's one of those things that it's all based on some false promises.
Mm-hmm.
And about the only thing that affairs ever deliver on is pain. You know, there's a lot of promises of everything else, but the only mm-hmm. thing that ever gets delivered is pain. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a misconception as a betrayed spouse, is when our spouses are involved in it that we think is so wonderful and so pleasurable. And don't you think the cheater also tries to convince themselves of that? But if they really looked into what it took to maintain those lives and those two separate lives and all the lies they had to tell, and that it wasn't as pleasurable as they thought it was.
Right. It's not. But at that point, between the fantasy stuff, which we've covered already,
mm-hmm.
And their need to, I'm trying to think of the fancy word, but what it amounts to, when we have to exert a lot of effort to achieve mm-hmm. something, in our mind we make excuses that it was worth the effort. You know, like
right.
for instance,
mm-hmm.
if we had to save all kinds of money and go through all kinds of hardship to get some kind of sports car, new flat screen TV, we want to justify and say it was worth it. You know, we had
mm-hmm.
a long
That's
wait, but
bad.
It's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And likewise with the affair, they're not always seeing the struggle because they want to think that it's worth it, because nobody wants to think that they're wasting their time.
Right, yeah. And I think they also make it, in their mind, think it's the relationship and the person is better than they really are, because why would they be putting all that effort into it if it wasn't?
Mm-hmm. Right, and so they're going to try to rationalize and say, well, I'm putting forth this much effort. It must be worth it in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be something in here. Now, to expand a little bit on the guilt, blame, and the rationalizing, I see the main goal is to shift, is to do the blaming in order to get rid of some of the guilt. One of their is to use the rationalizing, and with rationalizing, that's the fancy term for what we were just talking about, which is typically called the justifying of the emotions. And also that to hide their true motives and to avoid reality, because they are lying to themselves about their reason or their motives behind it. And so a lot of them, why'd you do this? And they say they don't know. A lot of times they have buried the truth even from themselves, and they don't know at that point.
And I think as a betrayed spouse, we think that they have thought this through and they understand everything they did, where, as you it's true, they have buried it and not really it just happened, they always say, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, there are some spouses, you know, that plot it out and plan it out, and they do it intentionally. I have found more often than not, they really have not, for lack of a better term, let's say, not always brought when they're in the midst of an affair. And they really haven't thought it out. The ones
mm-hmm.
that have are typically those that are using the affair as a way out of the marriage, and they're
right.
purposely trying to push this
mm-hmm.
so they
yeah.
can, hate to say bow out gracefully, mm-hmm. but in their mind, bowing out gracefully.
Right.
Okay. Now, in going through your definition of the affair fog, I also started thinking about what both the cheater and the spouse can do to deal with the affair fog.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I know that's a question that comes up. Okay,
it is.
Once I realize this, how do I deal with it?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to try to deal with each. Now, bearing in mind, there are some cases where that fog goes back and forth. So for those listening, you may find some helpful information in one column, even though you may long in the other column. So listen to the whole list because you never know where you're going to find little nuggets that can help you. Okay. For the cheater, they need to decrease their passive activities because when they're in the fog, it's almost like they want to put their brain on automatic pilot. And anything that keeps their mind in automatic pilot mode has potential keeping the fog going. So you want to decrease passive activities. It's passive activities, you know, like watching a lot of TV and just sitting back doing nothing type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You want to increase active activities, things that involve physical exertion. Now, I'll make a suggestion here, and it's going to sound a little bizarre, but it really has some bearing on it, and it's singing. Because a lot of times when we get into that passive mode, we shut down a lot of things, and you have to be active mentally and physically to sing. You know, singing is something we can only do real well if we're practicing. But singing forces you to not only turn your mind on, but also get the vocal cords and some of the stuff on the inside moving and getting it active. You also want to make sure that the cheater cuts down on any drugs or alcohol. And alcohol will increase the danger of that passive mindset. You know, even they might be open-minded and you see no problem with smoking some dope every now and then. It's not something you want to do when you're dealing with the fog.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get the cheater out exercising more, and you want to make sure to take care of some of the basics, getting enough sleep, because if you're not getting enough sleep, you're putting in a lot of strange hours, you know, way past midnight, your brain goes into some weird way of functioning that can keep the fog going. You also want to increase the amount of time you spend outside, you know, rather than inside, because a lot of times when we spend a lot of time inside and we have the same old daily routine, whether it be at the office or at home, our brain stimulation, so it just because it's not getting enough in its daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
And just, that increases the danger of this passive mode where the affair fog tends to dominate. So changing your routine, getting some new stimulation. Now, even if it's such simple things as finding a new way to drive to work, or changing your work schedule a little bit. Every little bit helps in terms of pulling out of this. Now, for the spouse who's having to deal with it on the other end, of course, first off, recognize the signs and symptoms. And I rattled some of those off, and if they have the definition from last week, that will give them a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Use a lot of open-ended questions when talking about things, because the questions that the cheater can answer with a yes or no. Because a person can be in the affair fog and answer yes, no, yes,
mm-hmm.
no, all day long. So you want to ask him questions that require more thought than just yes, no. But you want to avoid questions that are staged because it's almost like they can pick up on when you're asking them a question that you already have the answer to. Usually since they're being set up and they're going to avoid those. You want to do things like change the routine, change the diet. And here's one that a lot of people don't think about, but change the arrangement of furniture in the home. Was that a chuckle?
Yes.
Well,
never thought of that. Yeah.
Well, think about it. Well, I'll give you my reason. See, in some of the studies on drug abuse, I believe the study was done over in England, they had a lot of heroin addicts, and, you know, they would get the heroin addicts cleaned up at the hospital, then the addicts would go back to their homes with the same four walls, the same surroundings, and get back into their old habits.
Right.
Many times there can be triggers there in the home and those familiar surroundings that can keep them in that state.
Well,
and so that's why I say change, you know, change the pictures on the wall, change where the furniture is, because it will force their mind to have to think. They can't go into robot mode.
Right.
You were going to say something.
Yeah, I was just thinking, because I know, like in Doug's situation, a lot of his affair was routine. He would get up and start texting her, you know, at the same time until a certain time. Then they'd make a phone call, you know, and then they would meet for lunch. And I think everything was, you know, every day was the same way. And for him to pull himself away from there, he had to change that. And I remember when he stopped texting her, instead, he would spend that time with me on the couch. So he was trying to pull away by changing his routine. And I don't think he did it consciously, but, you know, it seemed to work. And I think that familiarity really makes them feel comfortable, gets the pleasure. If you can take that away and replace something just as pleasurable with it, that helped.
I think it helped to maybe pull himself out of the fog and away from the affair by, you know, changing some of his habits that he had had during the affair.
Yeah, and that makes a difference. And that's why, even though it may seem off the wall to be changing the furniture and your surroundings, it does help. Because a lot of times, and I think you as a wife would understand, it's almost like with once you get that spring cleaning going and you make changes, it's easier to make other changes. And so because you're wanting to build some momentum to get them out of that whole mindset and out of the fog.
You know, I'm sure that no betrayed spouse have thought about all those things of, you know, changing the furniture, changing. I think more they were talking, you know, we think more of changing our behavior, which I think also is helpful. But just the physical surroundings, that's something new and helpful.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. A lot of times the things that we have around us have more influence on our behavior than we think. So there is some power in that. I mean, much like, you know, when you're trying to get them out of the fog, if there are any of those souvenirs from their lover, you want to get rid of those. Period. Yeah, so if you see some strange jewelry or cufflinks or a necklace that you didn't get them, that should alert you to that something may be going on. Okay, well, we've got enough time for a couple more questions. You have some questions over what I went over today.
I always have questions. Now I can't think of any. You know me, I'm like constantly asking questions.
Oh, yeah, and you asked some good questions. And I know with the affair fog, there are plenty of questions.
I know, and it's such a hard thing. You know, I think you don't realize what you're up against. You know, when you first find out, you know, you think they're acting rationally. You think that they're the same, as you said, the same person you have always had, you know, same spouse. And I think, you know, as I say, you are, the task is enormous to pull them away. And the tips that you gave us are very helpful. You know, I just, is it, what produces the fog? Is it just the pleasure? I know that's a big question, but why? I mean, I know, you know, when Doug and I first met, you know, we were, you know, in love, and, but I didn't feel that I was totally, you know, thinking differently and just out of my mind. I don't know. It just seems like when they're in an affair that it's just so extreme. So different.
On that one, I wish I had an answer to that. Now, my suspicion is that they will eventually find out that there's probably some type of circuit in the brain that's involved
And when they're involved in the affair, it gets switched on. That's my suspicion. Mm-hmm. And part of it is driven by fantasy. Part of it by all the adrenaline and chemical that are excited with the newness of the situation.
And the secretness, too, in some points, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, because the more dangerous it is, the more adrenaline rush there's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think with today's technology and with texting and so forth, you are experiencing the excitement and the danger at any time. You know, you could be at your son's baseball game and the text will come and, you know, you get that rush.
Mm-hmm.
Where years ago, you didn't have that. You know, you had to sneak around on the phone or at work. But now, you know, you could be in constant contact with your lover while you're, you know, engaged in your family activities. And I imagine that is a rush.
Oh, it is a rush. And that's also part of the more difficult challenge, because nowadays that lover becomes a part of your life 24/7. Used
right.
to, it was just a matter of whenever the phone rang or they might have their meetings, but now it's a 24/7 thing.
Right. And they are, when they are in your life, they, it is a positive experience and they're telling you how much they miss you or how wonderful you are. And so they're constantly giving you validation and appreciation and, you know, boosting your ego with every text and every phone call.
Right.
24/7.
Yeah. And some of the stuff that I think that when they find the answer to your question, I suspect some of it will be in the brain, because the lover does not always create all the fantasies, because a big part of the fantasies are by the cheater. The cheater mm-hmm. many times embellishes the conversation and starts thinking ahead of what might be, what could be. And that gets them going.
So they're thinking that, oh, this person is this and that, even though they haven't really seen it from that person or that person's not said it to them. They're creating that person in their mind. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're creating, well, I can't say totally creating, but they're embellishing so much. It can be very different than the real person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going back to the baseball game, it could be, you know, while you're at your kid's baseball game, you get that call, and then the cheater's mind starts fantasizing about what they're going to do that weekend or what the lover's doing right there, even though they're sitting there physically at the baseball game.
Yeah.
Your mind is
somewhere. Having
right.
a lot more exciting place than they really are.
Yeah, because baseball can be pretty boring. So.
Yes. But I imagine, you know, I can see that, you know, the lover's calling and you're thinking, oh, they're sitting here doing this and that. And really, they're just as boring as you are. But they're
mm-hmm.
imagining it to be different. Yeah.
Right. It's almost like they have given their mind permission to let the horses out of the stall and things run free. And yeah, so the answer, the person's going to have to learn to tell themselves no to the affairs and start looking, no to the fantasy
mm-hmm.
and start trying to look at what is really going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm working with clients, a lot of times I use the illustration of eyewitness news. Now, I don't know if they have anything like that up.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay. So, but, most people understand eyewitness news, you know, so if a news camera was there and they saw, you know, had the lover or had your spouse on film, what would it actually show?
Mm-hmm.
What were they really doing? What were they really dressed like? What really went down? Where did they really go?
Compared to what was in the lover's mind. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Exactly.
I think that's the most difficult thing for a betrayed spouse, is because we see the inconsistencies, because if they, you know, when they're talking to us, they'll tell us this and it doesn't make sense. You know, Doug would tell me things and I was like, well, okay, so she wouldn't have fun, but what has she been doing the last 30 years? Well, she couldn't have fun. It's like, that's not, you know, that doesn't sound right. I mean, I think in their mind, they have a whole different picture of this person, where in reality, and when we're listening to it, it's a wholly different, it's a different picture, you know?
Right. And one of the dangers for a resolute spouse, when you get those strange messages, many spouses start thinking something's wrong with them. They start thinking they're the ones that are crazy. And you have to realize, no, you're not the one going crazy.
And that's so important to tell everyone that they're not. Yeah,
and that's one of the dangers with the fog, because as you come into it, many times you will find yourself feeling crazy when the reality is you're not the one going crazy. But as long as the cheater and the lover are creating these weird rules that don't make sense, it's going to feel crazy.
I found myself constantly having two conversations in my head, like what I knew. You know, I'm a pretty logical person, and everything that I knew in my mind, you know, about the other person and the relationship, and then I'd be like, well, maybe he is right, you know, and I'd be going back and forth. And it's like, no, I need to stay with my logical sense, what I feel, my intuition, and stop believing what everything that he's telling me.
Right. When I'm faced with that type of situation in the office, I have to point out that when that's going on, you're allowing the other person to dictate your reality. You know, because they are starting to define what's crazy, what's not crazy, who you are, who you're not, and you start believing it.
Is there anything that a spouse can do to combat that? Or just really just trust your thought process?
Well, I hate to say trust your thought process, because a lot of times your mind starts telling you all sorts of goofy things.
True.
So during those times, I usually tell people to trust their gut. Because since your mind is racing all the time and your emotions are in turmoil, you can't always trust your heart and your head during this time, but you can trust your gut. Because, you know, a lot of times your gut will say something doesn't feel right.
Right.
To it. This doesn't feel safe. You know, messages like that, or I know that they're up to something, even though they say that they're not up to something. But what has happened many times, we ignore our guts, and that gets us into trouble. As you start paying more attention to your gut, you're going to realize it probably has a better sense of what's going on than what your head and what your heart are doing. Because with your head, you're receiving these mutually contradictory messages.
Right.
It will make you feel like you're going crazy.
Well,
because they don't make sense. Because
they don't.
That cancel each other out. And that's why you can't trust those. And this is one of those things. If it feels crazy, it probably is.
I found myself making notes and then writing down reasons why I was thinking clearly that I was right. You know, when something would come up, I would put it in my journal, you know, and just try to convince myself the reasons why I believe this is true, you know, so I could go back and reread them and, you know.
But that's one thing, and this is one reason why it's so important to take care of yourself, because when you're told enough of the messages that you're the one that's imagining the affair, you're the one that is not any fun, or you're the one that's you've got to protect yourself so that you don't start believing those things. It's almost like they will plant seeds of doubt about
they'll consume you. But I think what I tried to do, and I don't know a lot of spouses, we tried to convince the other person otherwise. Is that a bad thing?
Okay, what do you mean by trying to convince them otherwise?
That they were crazy and that what they were thinking wasn't true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that almost comes over as controlling, wouldn't you think?
It can come across that way. The more important thing when you receive all these crazy making messages, to choose not to believe them.
Okay. That's the most important thing. Okay.
Yeah, within your own mind, to invalidate them, say, that's not true, I'm not accepting that. And to keep your own mental health, it's going to be important to say, I'm not going to accept that.
That is that's great.
Because otherwise, as strange as it sounds, even though the cheater's caught up in the fog, you can still find your own self susceptible to the things that they say.
Right. I mean, I did, yeah.
Because being that it's your spouse, you want to believe them.
Right. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a part of you that over the years does believe them. And so you tend to let down your guard with them more than anyone else. And so that stuff comes in there. But when an affair is on the scene, you've got to give yourself permission to say, I'm not going to accept that.
Can you say that to them verbally? I'm not going to accept that. Or just have the confidence to think it.
Well, at first, think it. If you work up the courage to say it out loud, that's a gutsy move, and it will definitely bring some changes quickly. But at least to your own self, because otherwise, when you just smile and nod and go along with all the stuff that you're saying, you're passively allowing all that stuff to go straight into your brain and start working on your self-confidence and on who you are. And that is creates problems.
It does. I think that is so helpful. I think, for one, to be aware of what is happening and to know that you aren't crazy, that some of the things that have been said and the actions aren't on target. And I think just having the power and the awareness will help you accept that you are okay. That, you know, that everything that they're saying, your spouse is saying about you isn't true, or about their relationship, or more importantly, about the other person. I think that was the hardest thing for me, was this person was this, 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 and this, and you weren't. To do some thinking, yes, about yourself, but then to, you know, dismiss that person can't be everything. She's too good to be true.
Yeah, and that's probably when you started dealing with the real reality, when you woke up that she can't be that true.
That's a long time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it does. And when you find yourself trying to defend, it starts some really weird dynamics, because you're defending against accusations that aren't even true. It's almost like, I know here I've got a hound dog that likes to chase his tail, but it's kind of like that. You'll find yourself chasing your tail, and the cheater's just sitting back watching the show.
Right. Yeah, and that's true. I think probably the best defense is just to continue living your life the way that you had lived it before, with integrity and honesty and, you know, being the best person you can be. You know, as I said, not, you know, trying to better yourself, but not changing yourself.
Right. And giving yourself permission to say that you're not going to accept certain things, learning to trust your gut again. If they can do those things, they're well on their way. Okay, we're going to need to wind things up. I enjoy talking with you. It's a lot of times it's Doug and I don't always get a chance to talk to you. So this was refreshing.
Well, as I said, I think the last part was just so helpful to everyone, to the betrayed spouses and, you know, the cheater, just to give them some power and make them realize that, you know, they are okay. And just to, you know, have confidence in themselves.
Yeah, because I know that some of this stuff will apply to the cheater, because sometimes the lover gets the cheater's head all messed up too.
They've got
to apply some of these same things.
Right. I mean, I you know, I told Doug, I think in some ways you were manipulated, and, you know, strong, no one can manipulate me. Well, yeah, I think you were.
Because they can, and you know, some of the old classic love songs by Frank Sinatra and stuff, you know, you put a spell on me. They don't use those images lightly. They're really, many times, you know, some head games going on.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for your time, and because I always learn something new, too, so.
Well, thanks.
Okay. Well, we will see y'all later, and I hope that y'all have an enjoyable spring up there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.